research moves freely between mathematics and physics, and so he was a natural candidate, which readily came to mind for thinking of people to ask to give these lectures. And so it's our great pleasure to have Robert here today, and he's going to be telling us about topological strings here.
Thank you very much. It's a great pleasure to give this second lecture. Those who missed the first, we haven't missed much because I've lost more introductory lecture about the interactions between man and physics. Today I want to start by basically two-part lectures about topological strings. And again, I know that people here in the audience have some of you are quite familiar with it, so I'll try to use some new things, old things, and also give you a little bit of an overview of the field. So first of all, in some sense, to state your why are you studying topological strings, there are various arguments. But so one thing you can say, so I know it's a given lecture talk, it isn't supposed to be a mathematics lecture series. So somehow the relation between kind of physical string theory and topological strings is perhaps one way to view it is really the relation between geometry and topology. So once at a math meeting I said, well, it's like a caricature of string theory, and there were many topologists there who are hugely offended. And because there's a very restructured topology that we physicists usually completely ignore, and that's because we work essentially over the real numbers. We don't see all the beautiful number theory that sits there. So caricature is not the right word, but it's certainly a much more mathematically rigorous and usually more exactly solvable field of string theory. And my purpose of this lecture and the lecture on Thursday is to kind of explain you various ways to think about this theory, try to explain why, in which sense this string theory, or in this case topological strings, achieve the quantum gravity or quantum drawing. And I will use various other examples and to set things up. And get you a little bit acquainted with various points of views. So let's start, I want to start a little bit systematic, so let's start to think about topological string theory, various simple as a perturbative theory. So let's start to think in terms of perturbative string theory. And then it's on the very general sense you can say, well, what do you need in these fields, some kind of general extreme field, a newly system, some kind of Hilbert space of fields, which usually has some kind of ghost number, so it's graded. So there are pieces of various, usually there's some right priority. And then there's a physical space, kind of physical field, so this will include various ghosts in the physical fields. Will usually be in the way of time price across the long run. And then what you do have? Well, you have an action that's typically looks like following. So it has a quadratic piece. There's some integration here, and then the security piece. There's some confidence. So what are the objects that you see here? Well, first of all, you have a kinetic operator that contains the VRST charge. That's something which squares to zero, and then it's degree one. And then there's the ghost, schematic, it's a ghost. And there's a corresponding anti-ghost operator V0 minus. And often there's a gauge condition that V0 minus on a equivalent of the Landau gauge. And that gives you the kinetic term, so this is just the propagation of the string, the probability of the propagator. And then there's at least the medium order cubic interaction, which is the famous pair of hands, by which three strings can interact. Yes?
You don't have any abstraction, but the interval is some trace on H.
Yeah, some trace. So, topological strings are just a realization of this structure in a very specific way. And so let me just. So, there are. First of all, we will work in the convoluted case, where our space-time x will always be a collinear free form. It's kind of a critical dimension. This means the topological constraints will only apply at these dimensions, but it's a fruitful starting point. So, collinear free form, this means a tension bundle as matching first turn class, and so there will always be a holomorphic free form, zero form, omega, that in local coordinates do something like dz1, dz2, dz3, up to an overall constant. And so that's not the geometrical thing. And then there will be a Kr, so we have a Kr measure. And we have the corresponding Kr form, K would be something like I times GIA bar dzi. So the Kr form and the holomorphic free form are typically be our data. So now there are some two models that you can consider. So this is the A model and the B model. I think today I will mostly be concentrating about the B model. So let me say what is the B modelization of this closed-ring structure. So first, what are our fields? So the fields are in general the following objects. So they are sitting in the following space. They are differential forms, general cube differential forms, that are exterior parts of the tension bundle. So what do we mean by that? That the physical field is something which has upper indices, which are holomorphic, and lower indices, which are anti-holomorphic. That means that it's a vector field in the holomorphic indices. And it's a differential form in the anti-holomorphic indices. So I'll explain in a moment what the geometrical significance of this field, these fields are. And in particular, so you have this other information here. So we need the operator Q. So the Q operator here is the del bar operator. So given by the complex structure, and this operator V0 minus is the delta. The differential, I will explain in a moment how it acts. So right on the action in a moment, but let's first explain a little bit about the geometry. So the B model is about essentially about organizing complex structures on the field. So some kind of limited problem if you think of it as a field with quantum gravity. It's not that we are not really kind of organizing the full space of metric deformations. You're only looking at the space of metric deformations that change the complex structure of it. So it's a specific kind of limited case. And if you do that, well, what is a complex structure? It just means that you locally have some piece which is C3, and you have some complex coordinates here. So W1, W2, W3 would be your three coordinates. And so you ask, what happens if I change my complex coordinates? Suppose I have some reference complex structure. And so let me write it in one coordinate. So if you have your one coordinate, say TWI, then it would typically be given by the original one coordinate, say the original coordinate C, and then there will be some little bit of dz bar f. So you can think of your one coordinate to be some linear combinations of the holomorphic and the anti-holomorphic coordinates. And a completely different thing to think about is that if you think about the del bar, the new del bar, which will be a function of A, so it will be a differential operator, it will be given by the old one plus, call this J bar, plus some combination of the holomorphic differential. So this field A, which I write as follows, I J bar, dz I, dz J bar, is the, you can think of it as a component, it's given by a component of the metric that changes the complex structure. And this is usually called the covariance Spencer field. So, indeed, if you look at this general setup of the full space of the string field theory, the physical field will be in degree 1-1. So, indeed, this field A is an element. It's a 0-1 form that takes values in the homomorphic tension bundle. So, it's indeed in the right ghost degrees to satisfy this condition over there. So, this is a general shape of the complex structure, and then the complex structure is integrable if the d bar operator is greater than 0. So the equations of motions are given by del bar a squared equals 0. Which you can write in terms of the original group a as well, del bar of a plus then you get commutator a equals 0. Now you should read this commutator the following way, the Gauss field. So how should you think about this field A? So I invite you to think about it as a Gauss field. But it's a Gauss field, in the sense that it's a one form in the anti-homomorphic index. But you see it's a group of B algebra index is the vector field DBZ. So you should think of A as kind of a 0-1 Gauss field, where the Gauss group are kind of the homomorphic diffeomorphisms. In fact, there is a Gauss condition of the field, which is the B0 minus on A equals 0. And there's a nice way to interpret it. So let me write what this operator B0 minus is. If you have sort of, this is in its homework, this is just a vector field. So we can define a dual object, A prime, which is the inner product of A with the holomorphic differential. So this is just a two form. So A prime IJ is omega IJ K, AK, where we ignore the anti-holomorphic index. So A prime can also be thought as a differential form, which is a two form to the holomorphic index and a one form to the anti-holomorphic index. I'm using capital omega both for the holomorphic three form. In this case, the differential form, so I'm not terribly confused about that. And if you use this notation, so this is just going essentially from, as we do in three dimensional elementary vector calculus, to go from a two form to a vector field. So the Gauss condition then, a prime is just as del. So V0 minus is del, the del operator. And so the Gauss condition is that del A prime is 0. And if you see what that means, it just means that the Gauss field, as it's viewed as a vector field, preserves the homomorphic volume form. So the actual, with this Gauss condition, the symmetry of the problem, and this is important, so this is not homomorphic differential, so now we get the volume preserving. Homomorphic. So that's the natural symmetry group of this problem. In fact, if you now use this notation, this equation of motion can also be written in terms of the field A prime, and it looks very nice. You get a action group like this. Everything is now written in terms of ordinary differential forms, a set of these funny objects which are partly multi vectors, partly differential forms. And then you can also see the action, so the total action I can now write down.
Is A plus A prime denoting A 1, 2, 1?
Precisely, yes. So you think of it as ordinary mesh product of vector fields. So all these manipulations are just in terms of the homomorphic vector indices. Right, so this is a two-form called five vector field, and you dualize it into a one form. So it's just a usual linear algebra. So what is now the action? Well, the action we can write down, because it will be now following form. So it's an integral over x, a prime, del bar over del a, or g string, times the integral. And that was a natural cubic form that you can write as a prime, which a with a prime. So you see this fits because a prime is a 2,1 form, and a wedge a prime is a 1,2 form, so the whole thing is a 3,3 form that can be integrated over x. So this is the famous Cordaro-Spencer action, and you can think, well, okay, now we start computing this. So it looks like you have written down a field theory that somehow are atomizing a theory of complex structures on the Scalabrine of 3 models. And something like that, you know, this looks like a transcendence action for these volume preserving Gettier for instance. But here I want you to think of for a brief moment, because this is rather complicated, right? Because what are we doing? These isomorphisms actually act on the manifold. So this gauge field transforms rather complicated on the manifold. Because it's not really the gauge field, because the gauge field itself is active. So a good question here is, how do Dipios act? I mean, this is really a field theory. I mean, what are the geometrical properties of these objects? I will see in a moment, indeed, they are pretty complicated. So, how do you solve this theory? So, so let's first solve it at the, this is a standard procedure, but I'm still do it. And I've briefly done this with Dr. Schumann last week, I talked at the workshop, and it's something similar, but just brief overlap. So how do you solve it at kind of three levels? So the point of this lecture is roughly this. First step is to go with you through examples where we actually go to code. I really want to discuss the code theory and how it's set up. But let's first do a few levels of the classical model. So let's also assume that our manifold X is compact. And then there's the following solution, which is usually called in the theory of supergravity theory, special geometry. Let me briefly do what to do. So this is my picture of the Calabria. It's of course three-dimensional, but I draw it like a cerebral circles. And I pick some bases of cycles from this. So I pick a basis. A's are a basis of the third homology of X. So if it would be a real circle, you would have this nice picture with A cycles and B cycles. And then you can do the second thing. So the way you look at this is you say, well, what are we doing? We are deforming the complex structure. So we have, say, a new holomorphic free form, which in the new form is dw1, which is dw2, which is dw3. And given the fact that we wrote the new coordinates in terms of the old coordinates with respect to A, you can just expand this, and this will be actually very nice of this omega, which A prime will be some radical expression. A few stories in A, so this is actually. So you can see that the gauge field A, abundantly, is just reprogramming, so it's changing the holomorphic free form. So we can also think of, well, we have this new holomorphic free form, and we want to describe it. And we can describe it in terms of its theories. So you can integrate this new homomorphic free form, I just drop off the tilde here. And we can complete this really first around the A cycles, we call them Pi, and then we integrate them around the B cycles, we call them Fi. So that completely specifies this free form. And then there are beautiful relations. I won't go through the derivation, but most of you are familiar with that. These periods are not independent, because in fact, the B periods are given in terms of the A periods by kind of the derivatives of function at zero. So this is usually called the free potential. And this best explains that the picture, so I'm giving this picture. So this is somehow our modelized base of complex structures. So these are the complex structures on X. So these are the classical solutions to this field theory, because each point in this modelized space gives a solution to this equation of motion modulo the natural symmetry group at X. In fact, we have a little bit more, because we are actually describing also the scale of this homomorphic free form. So you should think of this actually usually driven. And X, this is a partial bundle over the modelized space. So this gives complex structures on X plus a choice of this omega. So it's only a complex extra complex number, just the scale of omega. And then whenever you have such a complex structure from here, is the third cohomology group of X. And then in that space, you will have a particular vector, which is this omega. So once you run, you walk over all the possible solutions here, this vector omega sweep out a manifold. So there's a manifold here inside this space H3 of X. And now there are two important points that you have to keep in mind when you're studying for the other examples. So the first point is that this space here is a symplectic vector space. Why? Because if you have two three points, they all find data, there's a natural pairing, which is anti-symmetric. So it's a natural symplectic space. And the next point is that since the omega is parameterized by half of the periods, this space is half the dimension of this total space. And so what you see is that you can somehow think, so this symplectic form is, you can write just dpi slash dfi. So the A and the B periods are the natural subordinates of that symplectic space. And the fact that fi is given by this relation tells you that this subspace here, which is the modelized space embedded, so this space is actually a Lagrangian cone. Because it's given, say, if you think of the ti as the coordinates and the fi as the momenta, then the momenta are given by variations of some functional. And that's actually precisely the condition for it to be Lagrangian. So that's a nice invariant way to describe it, that this modelized space is given by this Lagrangian cone. And the sort of fact that momenta are given in terms of some action, this tells you that in some sense this, the partition function, which of course is an exponent of F0, is like the semi-classical wave function associated with this Lagrangian. So that's a very good result. So this is kind of the general theory, but we will be interested in a particular class of examples that are exactly solvable. It's a huge class of examples that I'll be talking about, in particular matrix models and other exactly solvable topological space. So I'm also interested in this space X is non-compact.
Question?
Yes?
That formula in terms of A, is that that's not just the local deformation, is that valid for
this
finite?
Yeah, so this is a finite A.
This is finite A.
Yeah, it's a, yes. So it's because this is a formula, yeah, so it's it gets the impact that this thing in the, so what you have to compute is that in terms of the new D-bar operator, this new A omega is zero, and that's actually good. So you really can exponentiate this deformation.
So that sweeps out the whole space and
yeah,
complex
the whole space. So it means that in some sense the A fields are some kind of non-linear coordinates on this sort of space. Be careful. So this space frame, the fact that you get the phase space out here, is not at all obvious here. Precisely. Because what are you doing here? So this is really one of the striking things, that you are describing the partition function of a field theory. And you see that the partition function, which is the exponential of free energy, looks like a wave function. It's like, so one way to kind of summarize some sensitive theory is that just the geometrical data give you a Lagrangian of some phase space. But it just happens that that's the way to describe these complex functions. And then this cries out for a quantization, WBD quantization. And the wave function that's associated with the WBD quantization is the partition function of the six dimensional.
Before you go to the final thing, I mean, is X0 something like a Hamilton Schrödinger function?
For what? Yes.
For the pattern, so is there
a... No, so this is a very important point, so we'll come back, I think, to what I want to talk about later, is that the fact that a quantum field theory gives rise to phase space, I mean, this is not a Hamiltonian formulation, this is a Lagrangian formulation. So this is not the phase space of that theory. This looks like the phase space of some auxiliary system. But usually what you have if you have kind of space cross time, then you associate the phase space with these data at fixed time. But here the whole space time is rising to a fixed space and the branch of time.
But what if you're doing the taking space solution, say,
Yes. But you can you only get the phase space, you get the phase space together with the Lagrangian inside it. That's usually that's the data that you are associated with specific states in your theory, or specific boundary functions. So that's definitely not an obvious thing. I mean, in some sense, this is not, I think, in any natural way explained on this theory. But I don't want to come back to this point, but this would at some point more confuse you than make you not happy, because in some sense that there's this. Again, usually particular states in the theory have a little bit of approximation.
But I was going to specify the word Lagrangian. So
yes.
These are solutions finite, non-overlapping quantisms.
Definitely.
And they're finite dimensional.
Yes.
They're much less than finite.
Exactly. Because what you're describing in your complex structure is more low limits.
Yes.
Yeah. So there is an interdimensional relationship that you divide by. Definitely. Yes.
And what do you call that 0-3 energy?
Okay, so it's a little non-trivial computation, but if you take this action, this transcendence action, and you fill in this solution, then the value of the transcendence action is this action. That's the statement. Right, so we have the classical action, we have the classical solutions, we can fill in the classical solutions into the classical action from the complexity. No. Well, no. Sorry. Yeah. So we should all be very careful that we are not talking about field. At some point, I want to relate it to seven-dimensional theory, which has a Hamiltonian and a phase space. And this structure is the Hamiltonian and the phase space. But here, the fact that there is this kind of very familiar structure. Still, it's not natural that the free energy itself has an interpretation to make on the system. So, I want to go now to a specific class of non-compact functions, the non-compact action. Because, essentially, it's very difficult to find exact solutions for compact manifolds. For non-compact manifolds, we can do much more. And so this is a simple example of Calabrian, namely a hypersurface in C4. Well, I still have to ask, does such a space, for instance, really allow for reaching that metric? But there's a very important class of hypersurfaces, so I will take my coordinates g, w, x, and y. And the class I want to consider is a component time. Well, it's a single equation, which has. So this is basically a quadratic function. So it's quadratic, it's an arbitrary polynomial. And there's a nice theorem that tells that these spaces, there is indeed a Ricci flat metric. So this is space X. So how should we think about the space? Well, so we can think about this as. So of course we are in three dimensions, but we can fiber the whole thing over the XY plane. So what is the fiber? Well, the fiber, that's a particular point, will be the equation GW equals minus H, when H is a fixed value. So how does this space look like? Well, this just means that G and W, well, this of course just means that W is inverse of G, and that means that what you get is something that moves. It's a complex curve, so it moves something like this. So it's like C star, C cannot be zero or infinity. But it's a smooth complex curve, and typically it has kind of a diameter. So there's a circle here, and S1, so we call it C. That if H is not zero, is just finite. But of course, something this vibration becomes singular when H is zero. So here is the equation H is zero. It's a complex curve in this complex XY. So this. So it's a homomorphic curve, it's a plane algebraic curve, in general it's non-compact. And what happens if you are on this point, then this curve becomes singular, so you can think of it becomes like this. Or perhaps better, if you think it's sort of the equation CW equals to zero. So it consists of two copies of the complex plane intersecting in the origin. So in the real picture you have something like this. So what do we have this vibration that becomes singular in this space. And we have something else. Then we have the holomorphic three form. So what is the holomorphic three form that we can write from this Calabial? Well, in this example, it's particularly simple. So the holomorphic three form takes the form dx, dy, dz. And in general, here you get the derivative with respect to the fourth element of this function that defines the hypersurface, but since it's the term is the derivative of vectorability, which is z itself, it's this equation. So it also like as follows, it's dx dy times d0 z. Now what can we do? So in general we have three periods. Say almost a free cycle of this omega. And we can do the two factors. So I always want to take these three cycles to be the form of this one cycle curly C, just about looping this curve here. And then it will be from a two-dimensional cycle downstairs in the XY plane. And then you can just compute residues. So computing residues D, you can just get an integral over D of the X and Y. So this is the first point. Stress, then you get a form, you can actually find a symmetric form on this complex plane. So it's a homomorphic symmetric form. It will be very important because this immediately suggests that somehow x and y will be non-commutative in some appropriate sense. Back to the complex, and you will compact in a moment. And there's something else that you can do because, in general, you can use stuff once more, and you will find that computing these periods, so here you're computing some kind of integral. So it's difficult to draw pictures because, of course, we are in complex space. But working the picture something like this, so here's our curve h equals to 0. This will typically be the domain that you integrate over, and then by stuff, you write this as y and x. But you now integrate around some one cycle on sigma, and what is sigma? Well, sigma is the spinning curve or real surface given by the equation h equals 0. So sigma here is the equation h x y equals 0 in viewed as a subsurface. So this is the whole sense, the whole purpose of this exercise, that this Cordero's density is a very complicated theory in three dimensions. We want to reduce the whole thing to a theory that lives just in sigma. So we want to go from x, which is a threefold, to sigma, which is a curve, or a real surface, so that's actually something that's shaped like this. So now this is not a metaphorically, it's actually all this real surface, sigma. And instead of the holomorphic three form, omega, now we have a one form, y and x, on this real surface. So that's the data that we are dealing with. And so we want to define the complex structure, and the complex structure deformations of this curve. Now, I also want to draw another picture. So remember that y and x are the two coordinates in this complex plane. And this curve is given by some relation. So we have a, well, I should be careful because in general it will be non-compact. So here is the equation x, y, so I want to think you to think now about this complex plane as a phase space, a complexified phase space. And this h is kind of a Hamiltonian. And so this relation h, x, y equal to 0, you should think of as a ladder set. So it's some complex set and a complex version of a ladder set. Because you see, we have this two form, dy dx, which is the symplectic form, and we have the corresponding one form, the new two form, y dx. So we really have all the data that usually you have in Hamiltonian mechanics, however, now in a complexified version. So before I deal further with this particular example, I want to say a few words how these are connected to matrix models. So what does it mean to change the complex structure? So we say change the complex structure. In general, it was a variation of the holomorphic three form. You say, well, this was defined by this Cordero's tensor form, A'. And also we knew there was this equation that was this gauge condition that delta of K' was 0, which actually means that locally at least K' can be written as del of some field phi, but phi is in general in the Calabi-Yau case is a 1-1. So this will become the form delta. So what does that mean in terms of this particular data? So here, what we're doing, we're changing this one form y dx. And how are we changing it? Well, in this particular way. So we're changing it in the form of del of phi. Where phi here is just a function. So this is nothing mysterious, because what are we doing? So this curve is y as a function of x. Right? Just knowing this one form yx is just drawn here as a curve. So if you're changing the complex structure, we're just changing the shape of this curve. So in some sense we have this curve, and y of x we derive as del phi. And we are changing the behavior of that curve. So how are we doing this? Well, so let me just make some claims, what are the right ways to deal with this. So this del phi should be viewed as a quantum field. And that means it's just an ordinary bosonic quantum field. So there's the usual mode expansion that we know very well. So this is the usual mode expansion where alpha m are quantized in the following fashion. And if you have such a representation, so then there's a Fox space obtained by just, you know, the usual way by acting with the creation operators on the vacuum. And particularly, we can look at this now, so we have coherent states. So the coherent state T will be given by the exponential of some alpha minus n acting on the vacuum. And all such a coherent state, the modes alpha n will be given by So how is this quantum field theory related to the semi-classical description? Well, in general, this del phi as a function of x will have a description of the following form, but has some coefficients that would like to write as follows, so these are for n positive. So what are we doing? We're doing the following thing. We say, well, let's change the complex structure here. So here x runs to infinity. So at large values of x, we're changing the complex structure. And these coefficients Tn here encode the change in the complex structure. So the Tn's are harmonic. In the case of a compact collabial, it was a finite dimension modular space, but now we have non-compact spaces. So there's an infinite dimension modular space, because we can take arbitrary variations here. However, that's for the leading terms, the things that blow up for like x. But the lower order terms, x, are, in fact, so these are called the dual variables. They are actually not free, they will be determined by the shape of the curve. So I claim that these elements again are given in terms of some function, this can have zero, Tn. And so they are determined again by some function at zero, and this is again the same thing, this is the same with Tn. Semi-classically. Quantum mechanically, in the quantum field, of course, what you have is that the Fn's are dual variables, so they become the conjugated modes, and so they will become the offering of the quantum mechanical. So the claim is that this field V phi, that's giving you the variations of the complex structure, in the full quantum field becomes a binary traditional quantum field, and you can quantize that in this fashion. So if you have a theory, so if this is this curve supposed to have a single boundary, then we have this coefficient in the end here. And then I'm claiming that the full free energy, the full partition function actually, can be written in the following way. So if there is this inner product of this coherent, state, T, based on state sigma, where sigma is a state inside this Fox space. This is the Fox case of this free boson. If you wish, the quantum, the description of the quantum field theory on this space. So this looks very traditional. So you say, okay, good, we have some. So how is this case? Correct, right? C will depend on both on sigma. Yeah, so C will depend on sigma, and of course, or it depends on the T security. Yeah, so it's for fixed sigma, we have the partition function that can vary with T. So you can already see that this is a problematic description. Because suppose we have the following thing, suppose in general, so this people circle is going to vary as n. So I can say, well, okay, so here, we have a description in terms of our quantum field phi of x. But suppose I'm here, and that's a one point, say x tilde. And now we have the field phi of x tilde, phi tilde. So what is the relation between these two fields? Are we just ordinary free locals? Rather than me, because this would be a theory of a quantum gravity. So how are the two related? So you really see the idea that this becomes very problematic, because how do you describe this? Well, if you remember, phi was parameterizing. So let me give you a very simple example where we see that these behaviors are very complicated. So suppose that our curve for the Hamiltonian of x and y is supporting very simple curve, x, y, minus 3. So let's plot it. So in real coordinates, it's looks like this, from my parabola. And in complex coordinates, it's more like this. You have the complex x plane, there's the complex y plane, and there's some kind of tube connecting it, where the distance between these goes like log u. So you have two heads, x and y, and you want to ask, well, how are the two coordinates related? So we can write here, y is del phi, and this star, say, that's coefficient tn, x to the n, just lower order stuff. And here we have x given in terms of some field type phi tilde as a function of y, which starts with tn tilde, y minus 1 plus lower order stuff. And what is the relation between x and y? Well, it's really a very simple relation. Namely, this is either just inverse or transformed. So we see that the expression y is del phi, and x is d phi tilde dy. And so now you can ask, how are phi and phi tilde related? Well, you see that this is a famous equation, this is just a Legendre transform. So in this case, the fields phi and phi tilde. So phi and phi tilde are given by the Legendre transformation. And there's a very natural way to describe the Legendre transformation as a semi-classical approximation to something else, maybe the Fourier transform. So one way, nice way to write it, if you write phi tilde, and I'll have to introduce kind of plus constant, and it will be given by this string of integral constant dx. So this is a function of y, it's the integral dx, exponent, and then there's xy minus. So at least in the limit, where z string goes to 0, this should be the way in which the fields phi and x and phi and y are related. And indeed, if you take small fluctuations, so if you write phi of x as from phi classical, which gives you the shape of the Riemann surface, plus a very small and tiny quantum fluctuation, and you just plug that in these equations, you will find that in this case, del phi y dy equals del phi, sorry, tilde, del phi is dx. And so del phi transforms honestly as a one form. But this is only in the leading linear approximation of that relation. And there was a very non-linear way in which the fields phi and phi tilde are related. So you see that phi is not at all like extended quantum fields. You have a very strange field theory that's locally here in a single border patch, looks like a nice free boson. But if you go from one patch to another patch, you have to deal with the following points, namely turning on the field phi, so looking at its quantum fluctuation, changing the geometry. So this field is a, looks like a scalar field, but actually it's perturbing its own network. So that's why it's transforming in such a very non-linear fashion. So how do you deal with this? There's some kind of nice solution to this. So, well, there are two points I want to say. So I want to explain at some point how this structure emerges from matrix models. I don't think I have time for this right now. I will do that on Thursday. But let me now give you a good indication how to think of the transformation properties of this field, because this seems like an injectable situation. So there's a nice solution here, which is namely working the defects. So we do include defects. So remember, this is the defect. So let's try to look upstairs. If you have a Calabi-Yau X, so you have to look at models of the D-brains, the natural class of D-brains that appear in the D-mode. And the thing that we're interested in are the ones where the D-brain itself is like a D-string. That is, what we have is, let's call it C. C is a complex curve. So it's complex one-dimensional sitting in our Calabi-Yau D-mode. Now, so what you have to do then is to consider open strings that are attached to this. But there is another important point. So, how should we think of these strings in the Brillouin sense of theory? Well, the first point to make is make the following claim. So these strings are defects in this Brillouin sense. So how do they manifest themselves? So remember, this is a two-dimensional object in six new dimensions. So we can go do something that goes around, so let's call that B. And this is a three cycle, right, that links this two cycles. So claim, if you take the homomorphic three form and compute its periods around that cycle B, well, before we put the D-brain, this was just you just fill it up, something sitting inside. So you have no holding, right? It would be philosophy would be critical. But now there's this defect sitting in. So we think really of the D-brain as some kind of a Wilson-like object and we can take it out and drill a little hole. And the claim is that the change in the complex structure would be such that this would be proportional to G-string. So it's like a Coleman effect. Including D-brains will actually introduce these couplings to the background, and there are various ways to see this. But it has directly an important consequence. So one of the consequences is that the del bar on this called Conera Spencer field, which is the deformation of the del omega. So this is del omega. And it will not no longer be zero, it will be a delta function here. Because you derive it by capturing it on two strokes. And you will find that this will have be a source now, so this will be G string times the delta function for this complex curve. So it means that the D-brains are sources for our gauge field A, and what we can do is now, so one way to check it is put this back into the action. So remember those action, which look like this, del bar over del A prime. If you plug this in, you'll see that actually this becomes very simple. This was an integral over the complex full of Calabi-Yau. Now you get lots of delta functions, you get one over the G string squared here, and you get something that's proportional to the G string. And if we write again, which I'm doing all the time, A prime as the derivative of the prime, then you see actually that you get the following term here. You get the del cancels with the 1 over del, the del bar acting on A prime gets the delta function. So you get an integral like this, and this is nice because it means that 1 over G string times the integral of prime can open the ring. It is the usual way in which D-brains couple. So the way you should think about it is as follows. This is a perturbative string field. It's like the Ramon-Ramon in full superstring theory, field strength. So this is a little bit confusing because I invite you to think about A as a trim assignment like gauge field, but from the string theory perspective, it's more like field strength in the sense that the string itself is not charged with respect to it. And now you see that this you should think of as a gauge potential And the deep rate is not charged, and then this is back in the school one. So we have a very specific description of the defects, and the defects couple in this very simple fashion. Now this we can immediately translate into our formula that we gave out with its non-compact polynomial. So remember there we have the Friedmann surface sigma. Together with this one form yx, which was the analog of our holomorphic free form. And now we can consider D rays that are kind of points, but the D rays I want to consider are points on the Riemann surface where they have two dimensions sticking out in the fiber direction that was always there. I want to do these D rays now, but they should have the property that the contour integral around the circle of y and x surrounding the point P should be equal to the string. Now remember, y dx was our quantum field del phi. So we have the property that if we quantum integrate to del phi in the presence of our brain, then this becomes a g-string. So we need something that creates a defect for the field del phi. Now this is something we know very well in two-dimensional field theory, because that's precisely done by the vertex operator. So we have a nice expression here, but it's a vertex operator that creates a defect. And it's given by the following function, e to the power 5 to get x, at the point x on the Riemann surface. And e to the 5 is equal to the right hand space like this. And this is something we know very well. So let's call it psi of x. If phi is a free bottle, then psi is a curve. So these are just examples. So this is a good thought about what you can have that a free bottle is naturally magnified in cycles where it qualifies. And therefore, there are vertex operators that create defects with vortex lines for the field. And so we have to take advantage of all these experiments. So the question is now, okay, can we perhaps, using fermionization from fermi-boson, to get a handle on our field theory? So let me now give you the solution of the field theory. And then I'm going for this first action. So the question is now, how do the field determinants transform? So play sine x is a non-commutative This is kind of bizarre because, well, let me explain why that's what I mean. So we have to answer the following question. If we go from a coordinate x to a coordinate x tilde, how does the psi of x transform? So let's again go to a specific example where this dual coordinate is just a coordinate that I call I, y, because mu over x. So this was the case of the result. X, y, and we want to know how the fields here are given in the order for us. So what do we have? Well, in general, we have a transformation between these two patches that preserves the homomorphic form. In this case, the homomorphic form in the space, in this two-dimensional space, was just the usual symmetric form the x and y. So the coordinate transformation here is a canonical coordinate transformation. We have a canonical transformation. This is the first point. The second point is that there's a quantum effect. So quantum effects, or g-string effects, basically make these x and y coordinates to be be non-commutative in the sense, in the usual traditional sense. So just get the standard quantum mechanics, where y is the dual pair. So y is the minus dx. So it's a little bit bizarre, right? So what are we having? We have this kind of volume here. We can describe our geometry as the energy level of a Hamiltonian. And what we're now saying is that it's a quantized system. So what would it mean for the fields which are living on this level? The GDS is complex. Everything is complex, so that's why we're worried about plus I's and minus sign and everything. So there is an obvious way in which we can, so we have to find an action of the canonical transformations preserving in this algebra. But this is just a way in which canonical transformations can be presented in quantum mechanics. So we just go to quantum mechanics. Ordinary quantum mechanics. Now, in general, of course, if you have a general area which you have canonical transformation, there's not a unique action of the different principle, but suppose we have linear transformation. Suppose we have some linear transformation, where I say the new fields, x tilde, the y tilde, are given by some matrix, A, B, C, D, X, Y. So we're just looking at, say, SP2, or F2. Well, we know how these are implemented in quantum mechanics, because they're usually given by something which is called the metaflectic representation. So that's just a representation of the usual space of wave functions. So if I give you a wave function psi of x, then I know how to implement the canonical transformation. In particular, suppose I have this very simple one, so the one which is relevant in this example, that we can do much more simple, much more complicated things. So for instance, if you have the map that maps xy to y minus x, which is the case of where this SL2 transformation is just this. And we know how this is implemented in quantum mechanics, Fourier. So we know that psi of y still is given by dx, e to the power of xy, that will easily explain psi. Now there are two things to see in this equation. Let me be careful. Say it in a moment. So first that's a transformation. So here I think just as a transformation of the complex plane. The second point is that in the complex plane you have the curve. XY minus zero. But I'll come back to the moment. So the first statement is that there's a very natural way in which these volume of circuit transformations are active quantum wave functions, which is by this form. So there are a few remarks here. So the first remark is that actually for this to make sense, that psi, the natural thing actually to consider is the psi of x to be all lowness in quantum mechanics. It's very natural to think wave functions that have their potential forms. Because if you square them, you get the long form that's going to be. And indeed, if you take a standard classical approximation to this equation, you find that this equals psi tilde, in this case y, 2y, 1. So in the limit, again, in the limit, well, I should say nothing is in the limit, but this is a small fluctuation. That means in this limit of small fluctuations, the fields, the quantum fields, Rx, becomes a spin on that, usually, curve. This is actually, however, not a linear transformation, very complicated transformation, in which they are going from one place to another place. And the second point you see that in the, if you take the semi-classical limit, so we take the limit, so zero, that is what we're doing here. Let's we take the WKP then, from the right as e to the 5x of these things. So So now I invite you to think of this formula two ways. So we know this formula in terms of Fermi vocal kernel. And now think of this as a wave function given by W to the form. In that particular limit, as so here comes your point, I mean that this part of x in the class is given by this equation. So y now given by this. And this is just the usual way the Hamilton-Jacobi formula. So this is the W to the solution for the level set given by this particular limit. So then we find here that this is W of KB. And that's consistent with kind of the previous equation set, so it was kind of the same classical. So this actually then allows us for a solution, so let me now give you some demo that we now have the solution. So this is our human surface. It's given by some equation h x y equals 0. However, now we remember that's lying in this complex plane, and the complex plane now has a holomorphic symplectic form, and so we can quantize that holomorphic plane. So now this real surface is what I would like to call a quantum human surface, or non-commutative human surface. And so the claims are that we can do quantum proof here of that. So we can put here the rings. These are the usual three terminals. However, they transform if you go from one place to another place by this generalized transformation rule. So they're quantum in the sense that the fields behave like quantum wave functions. So we have a quantum. So psi has should be thought of as on one hand like a wave function, so it's transformed under this area of circuit diffeomorphism, which was the synergy group of these theories in terms of this kind of quantum representation. And it was a quantum field in the sense that they are really quantum in terms of their model. So we can also write this in terms of psi and then the start of the usual. Relations between the fermions and their emission constants. So in some sense, and I'll show later, that this allows you to solve this general class of minimums. And of course, there are still many questions that surround us, because this is a very abstract situation. And you can ask, why are we listening here in a field theory? Why was it kind of quantized in this particular sense? Why did we get out of this game? Because we had this natural homomorphic 2 form coming here, which is descended on the homomorphic 3 form on the Calabria. So some centers suggest that the thing that we are looking at is not only a quantum field theory, but it should also be somehow quantized in a different direction. And I hope to explain better in this second lecture where the second quantization is coming from. And so our claim is that this should actually be properly understood in terms of a higher dimensional theory, the 7-6 plus 1 dimensional theory. And the second quantization is then coming from the back, which that may sometimes have another advantage. But I will do all that. Thank you.